Welcome to Slant Podcast. This is your host, Dana Tasswin Burgess. This podcast is an ongoing conversation around the Asian American experience through the lens of artists and luminaries. Thank you for tuning in. Today, we are joined by Olivier Award nominee, Jean-Jean Briones, and daughter, Isa Briones, who recently joined the cast of the Tony Award-winning best musical, Hadestown, on Broadway. They play Hermes and Eurydice. This father-daughter duo are veterans of stage, television, and streaming series. Jean-Jean was last seen on Broadway and in the West End as the engineer in Miss Saigon, and is known for his various series regular roles on Ryan Murphy's Ratchet and Class of 09. Isa is best known for her regular series roles on Star Trek Picard and Goosebumps. I'd like to start at the beginning to better understand an artist's journey. Jean-Jean, where did you grow up and how did you become an actor?
I was born and raised in the Philippines, Manila, Philippines. I actually came from a poor family, one of the poorest neighborhoods in the Philippines. It's actually one of the slums. But I got involved in art because of necessity. My mom brought me to the church. The church owns a school, a very good school. And for me to get there, I need to live there and sing at all the masses in exchange. So I started singing, and that became my life, singing. And then I was introduced to theater, and I became a theater performer. And then Miss Saigon came, and that brought me a lot of opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Great. Isa, you grew up in, of course, a musical theater acting family with a very different childhood experience than your father's. Can you tell us what that experience was like?
From a very young age, I was surrounded by art, specifically musical theater. My dad was often on the road with Miss Saigon, and that's how my parents met. They met doing Miss Saigon in Germany, and I was born in London because my dad was closing out the West End production at the time that I was born, that month. And then, yeah, it was for a long time kind of hopping between tours and me just growing up being homeschooled, traveling and being backstage. Mm-hmm. And then around when I was 8 or 9, my parents decided to settle down in LA and try film and TV and try auditioning. And that was a really interesting time. The recession had just happened, started, and everyone was out of work, and film and TV was really hard to break into. And that was a time of really me and my brother getting to see, okay, this business is definitely not always success or always working. It is working hard, and sometimes it not always paying off, not always being recognized, and going through some really rough times. And that was rough, but it was also a beautiful way for us to see what this business is actually like and what you need in order to do it. It can't just be like, oh, I think I'll try doing this. You have to be passionate about it because it's not always going to be sunshine and roses. And I think watching our parents go through that and seeing that they still had the passion for it, still wanted to do it, still worked hard, really gave us the tools to go forward with it. We still chose to do it, even though we saw the hardships. And that was a moment where I wasn't sure if I wanted to still act. I had been auditioning as a kid, but it was very hard. And being mixed, there weren't a whole lot of roles for mixed kids because you always have to fit into a family. And there still weren't a lot of interracial couples on screen. Definitely not like my family, never an Asian dad and a white mom. Like, I'd never seen that before. And yeah, I was like, do I still want to do this? And then I got to see my dad do Miss Saigon again and see so much theater in London. And that was a moment where I was like, oh God, I have to do this. I can't see myself doing anything else. Like, there's something inside. Like, I have to be on that stage or I'm going to die, kind of thing. I'm very
right.
But yeah, and that's what.
So dramatic.
Yeah, I know. I wonder where I get it from.
I think what's so beautiful about what you've both shared is that there is a theme of resilience which runs through your family so strongly and is being passed down from generation to generation.
You mentioned this fascinating issue of casting and what it means to be Asian American. How does being Asian American mold your perspective of the world? And how does this point of view inform the many different characters that you've both taken on?
For me, I think that every role that you start, obviously, there's going to be pieces of you in it. Even if the role is very different from you as a person, it's impossible to leave yourself completely out of it. And I think I've had the good fortune of having roles that do feel very similar to me in a lot of ways. For example, with Star Trek Picard, when I was playing a few characters, but I was mainly playing Soji, and something like that, at least for me, it helped that what was going in my head was, this is someone who feels a certain way, but then the people outside of her are telling her she's something else and telling her she's not enough human. She's not enough of a robot. She's not enough of whatever. And that is a very mixed kid experience. That is also just a very Asian experience. It's always, oh, you're not Asian enough. You're not white enough. Mm-hmm. Or if you are Asian, people being like, oh, you're so white. Look at you. Or stuff like that. Or being called a banana or something, like all those terrible things that you are told as a kid. It's a very unique experience and a worldview that you can bring into something like that, where at the end of the day, it's identity and it's feeling like I'm not enough. And I think that is something that is very applicable to a lot of roles. And I think that something like this with Hadestown that we're doing right now, it's been very cool to bring our culture to it and bring ourselves to it. They know that all of these actors coming into it are going to be very different. And it is a show that really lends itself to that. And so in certain costume things where I asked if I could have some like traditional Filipino fabrics put on my coat that I have.
Oh, nice.
And in my head, she's this poor girl who does not have a lot to her name, but she has scraps of things. And it's, oh, maybe that's something left over from her mother, or you don't know. And those are things that I can bring to it that maybe the audience doesn't know, but it lives in my performance. And that's really special to me.
Nice.
Beautiful, Issa.
Thank you.
For me, that's a very interesting question. Doing theater in the Philippines, we did a lot of Broadway shows. And the thing is, we try to emulate Western things, Western way of speaking and accents and all that. And people always tell you, oh, you should be able to do everything. So I was never really encouraged, even in the Philippines, to do my own culture. And so when I got to the United States, it was always do what white actors are doing. And then the reality is there is no work for people like you to get a Caucasian role. And also the roles are always behind the counter, behind the serving Chinese food or this and that, and just be grateful that you booked that. Until a few years ago that I started going, you know what? I need to show them who I am. I can't be pretending to be somebody else. I need to be as unique as possible because that is what's gonna set me apart from other actors. And that's when I realized, John, you have something to offer that another actor is not gonna be able to do because you are so unique. And that's what I've been doing, especially after when I booked Andrew Conan and Gianni Versace, I was able to go, oh, I know this. I know this guy. I have something to offer. And that opened everything for me. Be yourself. Just do what you know. And now this, Hadestown, they encourage me to insert my culture in it. And I went, yes, because this is who I am.
Of course, I'm a big fan of both of you. And what I find so fascinating is that you're talking about an industry that we hope is changing. But I remember when I was a child, the only things that I could see on our black and white TV was martial arts movies from Hong Kong and then Charlie Chan movies that were yellow face. And I remember even as a child thinking, oh, I'm just so thankful I can even see these things because no one looks like me. I can't quite relate to them. And so when I see both of you, I'm so hopeful about our community and about the future. And I was wondering, do you ever feel like an outsider that has moved from the periphery to the center of a mainstream industry and that somehow you're carving out a space for other Asian American actors?
I don't know if Issa feels the same. I do. And it's funny that you mentioned the yellow face thing. When I booked Miss Saigon for the first time in London, they flew us from the Philippines because they auditioned us, flew us to London, and Jonathan Pryce was to play it. And he was supposed to play it as a Caucasian who was born in Vietnam. And somebody pointed out, if he's Caucasian, then he can get out. So they changed him to a Vietnamese and then put prosthetics on him. For me as a Filipino, that was normal because we saw a lot of Hollywood movies with prosthetics playing Asian.
Right.
And the world belongs to them and they can do whatever they want. And I'm just a visitor in their world. And so I felt that I was in the periphery. Mm-hmm. And now I'm here and we're, in a way, paving the way for the younger generation because we had to fight, we had to persevere.
Mm-hmm. Makes complete sense. Tell us about Hadestown and the characters you portray.
In Hadestown, I play Eurydice, and the show is so beautifully written that really everything lies in the text. And that's one thing that the directors always told us. They were like, if you're ever lost, like just lean on the text because it's all there. And so when you listen to the show, it tells you who she is. She's a hungry young girl. She is a runaway. She is always on the run, trying to find shelter, trying to find work, trying to just find something. And she's often been alone, has a very kind of hardened outlook on life. And when she enters the story, she meets Orpheus. And Orpheus is, I think in her eyes, this kind of like, stupid little boy. He's so dreamy, like whatever. She knows how the world actually is. Like she's not going to spend time on someone like that who is so idealistic, but she falls for him. As my dad's character says, in spite of herself, she falls in love with Orpheus. And I think it's very universal for a lot of people who have been hurt in the past or who have felt pain, who have felt like they've had to hide themselves or protect themselves at all costs, showing someone like that, breaking their walls down, letting love into their lives, letting art into their lives too. Because really what Orpheus is, he's this artist. He is a poet. He is this singer, and it breaks her walls down. And that's a really just such a beautiful, affecting thing to go through every night, to watch our amazing Orpheus, Jordan Fisher, sing these beautiful words written by Anais Mitchell, genius. And it doesn't really take acting. I'm just listening to the most beautiful poetry of this world that could be. How could I not break down my walls?
And I can see how it must break down the audience's walls as well and allow them to find themselves within these characters, which bring out empathy. And John, what about you?
I play Hermes. He is one of the gods. He's cunning. He's eloquent. He's like the messenger and herald of the gods and the guide of the dead souls to Hades, to the underworld. But he is also associated with luck and he loves people. He's playful in our show. He's the storyteller and he loves to tell the story. He knows what the outcome is. It's not a good outcome, but because he loves these players who are in this story, he's hopeful that maybe this time it will turn out differently. So he keeps telling it. And in a way, he's like a hype man for everyone. Let's do this again. Let's tell the story because this is beautiful. And maybe someday, maybe at the end of this, something better will happen. And I love that it's life. We know how life is right now. And sometimes we think it's not going to get any better. It's always going to be the same. You have to live it. You have to tell it. You have to inhabit it and enjoy it and enjoy the journey because you never know.
I love this idea of a character which is expounding the necessity to the human spirit of hope and serendipity. It's so important, isn't it, as an archetype?
Absolutely.
Hadestown has different genres of music, different references. And what is your process in interpreting different musical genres?
I don't know if there's process, but just for me, I'm very grateful that my parents really raised me with a love of a variety of genres and music styles. I would just around the house hear the Beatles, hear Queen, and then I'd hear India Ari, and I'd hear musical theater, Barbara Streisand, Michael Bublé, and then I would hear like French rap. And when I sing the music that I love to sing, I think, oh, where did I get that sound from? Where did that come from? And I look back and it's, oh yeah, all these different artists that my parents like exposed me to at a young age. Mm-hmm. And just that kind of knowledge and immersion into a variety of styles makes it easier to go with the flow and whatever mm-hmm. music you encounter in the workplace. But I think with Katie's Town, it's so many different influences of, obviously, it feels very based in New Orleans jazz and rhythm and blues and a lot of African styles that it came from. And there's so much like folk. It all blends into something so beautiful that every voice can fit into, which is really amazing.
Nice. There's a place for everyone. That's great. Yeah. And John.
I sing differently than how other people have played this role. I sound old. And so when I get notes that you can relax here a little bit, I have to practice it and keep singing it until I get what they're trying to tell me. And I am just so lucky that I think I'm able to give them what they want. And this music is just so beautiful. It's perfect.
Because it's storytelling. That's the thing, is like the music styles obviously are important and they lend so much to the storytelling. But at the end of the day, it's the story. And that is where the beauty and where the musicality comes through naturally, because it's written so well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So this whole amalgamation of sounds that you're engaged in, it's so wonderful to hear about how you talk about this team that helps guide you towards the sense of authenticity within the music. I think that's very generous also in the way that you talk about working as a team. Do you approach acting for stage versus for television differently? And if so, how?
For me, there is a difference, but it's not a lot. I learned that it always needs to be grounded in truth. But on stage, you have to reach what we call the grandma in the balcony. Mm-hmm. And I get notes sometimes, John, that's great, but can you lift your head? Can you lift your chin a little bit so that the balcony can see you? And on screen, you contain those emotions. It's like a thought instead of explaining, if that makes sense.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. Beautifully said. I'm struck by what a wonderful relationship you both have. And part of that relationship is also based on age. And I wonder whether, because you say you were the youngest cast member of Hamilton and of Star Trek Picard, so you're coming from this very youthful perspective and John's coming from this wiser, older perspective. And how do you think that shapes your acting today and even your interrelationships and working on the same show?
Age is a very interesting thing for me. Growing up, I was mainly around adults. So when we did settle down in LA and I went to school, I did not know how to interact with kids my age. And that was definitely hard. I was always thinking, oh, I need to be older. I need to be more mature. I would always get those, oh, you're such an old soul and you're so mature for your age. And I would feel it. Yes. Yeah. Yeah. Tell me that I'm older. That's awesome. But then as I've gotten older, I did start to realize that doesn't have to be the goal, and enjoy being young, and that I can act my age and have fun, and that being an adult doesn't mean not having fun. And I think now I'm so thankful that this is the age that I'm working with my dad and not earlier, because I think I would have had a lot more anxiety. And now I can really appreciate that that is my father. That is the person who made me. He teaches me every day, and I work with him. It's not, oh, now I feel smaller because someone who has authority over me is here. So no, that's just the person who has made me who I am today. And thank God I get to be on work with them, be on stage with them. And they get to witness me as the adult that I am now, even though I know I'm not the most adult person in the room. That doesn't mean I'm less respected. I know that he respects me. I know that everyone around me respects me. And that's been a big journey to this point. And I'm also just very grateful to my dad because he has made this experience so easy. He's always there for me when I need someone to lean on or guidance in any way. But I know that he trusts me and respects me as obviously as his daughter, but as an actor and in this workspace. He sees me as his coworker and lets me do my thing. And that's really beautiful.
Beautiful. Doing what I'm doing for a long time now, it gives you confidence, right? And when you get older as well, you begin to accept things that's your limitations. You go, you know what? I can't do that. I can do this. This is my safe zone. But also at the same time, you go, yeah, I can push myself there. You know yourself better when you're this older. And but at the same time, I've realized that as long as you're open to anything, you always think you're learning and you never stop learning. I think you're going to be in good shape. Issa and I would talk about the show and she would give me pointers of a certain scene that I'm having problems with. And I go, oh, yeah, that's right. I think it's just that. Just be, yeah, you're older, you're experienced, but man, there's so much to learn.
Oh, that's beautiful. When you envision the future, do you have a golden dream of a project or special part that you hope to play?
I would love to play something that someone will offer me.
I want work.
That's the thing that my wife and I taught our kids, love the work. Sometimes you go, yeah, I want to play that. I want to play that. But for what? What reason? Is it for glamour? But when something is handed to you, it's, okay, this is a challenge. What can I do with this? How can I tell this story? So it becomes the work, right? It becomes about the work.
Theater, I think for both of us, is the thing that fills our soul. And that's the thing about it is you always have to come back to that to fill your soul. And I really want to be on like the ground floor of a lot of things. I want to be a part of creating new shows, like originating a role, but also not even being in it always. I want to help produce things. And I think that's a thing that as I've gotten a little bit older and starting to realize, oh, don't rush this time. You have time ahead of you. What I'm doing right now is definitely not necessarily what I'm going to be doing next year. And so I've been trying to be more expansive. I want to be creating things and being at the place where I'm able to provide work for other people as well. They're like people like us need to be behind the camera more too. Mm-hmm. And I want to be a part of that change. And yeah, it's the silly answer, but it's like, I want to do it all.
That's a great answer.
Yes. It starts with us now. It's up to us to create things. And I've started to do that with my wife. We're going to create things. We're writing, we're producing. And because our stories are not going to be told by other people, it needs to be told by us. And we need to own that. And that's what I've accepted now, that my responsibility now is telling stories in a different way. And yeah, being behind it.
Mm-hmm. So important. John John and Issa Briones, thank you for joining us today. And what a pleasure. And best of luck to you both on Broadway in Hadestown. I know that we're all going to want to see it.
Thank you. Thank you for having us, Dana.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for tuning in today. Please rate the podcast on your listening platform and tell your friends. Feel free to contact me at slantpodcast.com. It's always great to hear from you, our listeners. A special thanks to our sponsors, the Dana Tassuin Burgess Dance Company, the Cherry Blossom Giving Circle, and the Dedi Liam Gunawan Hickory Legacy Fund.